Good morning, Your Honors. David Partovi representing Trinidad Rivera Corona. I will seek to save about 5 minutes worth of time for my rebuttal.
Okay.
Mr. Trinidad Rivera Corona asks the court today to remand his case for further hearing on his motion for substitution of counsel and withdrawal of his guilty plea based on the district court's failure to adequately inquire into the circumstances surrounding the breakdown of communication between he and his counsel. As the court's aware...
Can I ask a question? Because you said breakdown of communication because that's what our cases tend to focus on. But that's not exactly what this is about, is it?
No, it's not, Your Honor.
I mean, and I don't know that you're bound, I mean, to prove breakdown of communication as opposed to some other reason why he should have gotten new counsel. And here I gather it's that he claimed, although he never really had a chance to explain it, that he was being essentially extorted or something like that. So even if he was still talking to him, would that matter?
No, I think you're absolutely correct. That's the gist of my argument. I did use the phrase breakdown in communication because that's what the case law discusses. But in reality, I think extortion is the other correct word.
Extortion after he went through a plea colloquy and signed an affidavit saying no, there was no threat, anything of the sort?
That's correct, Your Honor. My reading of the record, and first let me just say that the real thrust of the appellant's argument here and the difficulty that I have with this record is that we don't know.
Well, we don't know, but the district court, let me put the inference on the colloquy that went on. It seems to be that he was a retained attorney. You weren't the attorney, obviously.
I was not the trial counsel. It was Nicholas Marchi, and my understanding was he was retained.
He was retained. He said he was.
Yeah.
And, in fact, that's part of the issue, was that he'd used up the retainer. There was a change of plea on the day of trial because a co-defendant had decided to invoke the Fifth. So he went through a change of plea, and he signed the declaration and went through the plea colloquy, in which he affirmatively stated that he wasn't coerced and so on and so forth. And then within a week, he's calling Marchi's office, apparently, and then within 2 weeks, there's the Marchi affidavit asking to be relieved. And he tells the court that he was retained, the retainer had been used up, and then your client says, well, he wanted $5,000 to proceed to jury trial, and I was scared that he was going to, or he threatened to sue my family. And it appears that the district court understood it to be a fee dispute and didn't ask any questions on that, and then proceeds to deny the motion to appoint substitute counsel, said he'd go out and retain. So why can't we infer from the record that that is essentially what was in the district court's mind as he's evaluating this, and it isn't a breakdown, and it's, you know, he's just gone through two weeks early through this colloquy. So why isn't that sufficient?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think you can infer that. My problem is you could also infer that the court didn't believe Mr. Rivera Corona that his family was being extorted. I think on the record that we have, the district court made two assumptions. I think we can assume the district court made two assumptions. One was that it was a fee breakdown. He did reference money. Second of all, on page 10 of the excerpts of record, he indicates that because you're not getting along with your counsel is insufficient. But I really think that on the record we have here, those two issues in isolation, getting along, which really wasn't ever alleged, and a fee dispute are quite potentially not the issues. I think the issue is the prosecution concept. And that's why I use the word extortion. I want to be very upfront. I do think that extortion is a sort of an aggrandizement of what maybe happened here. But it's not inaccurate. What happened here is Mr. Rivera Corona came into a court who, based on our record, had likely already made up his mind. And I had planned to refer the court back to the case of U.S. versus De Amore, where this court said that it appeared that the trial court's mind had already been made up. In our case, the court came out, read a portion of the plea agreement into the record, and said, I don't find anything in the motion which would appear to suggest a basis for allowing your attorney to withdraw, but I'm prepared to hear from counsel. So he came out not seeing a basis, and then heard, my family is being threatened with prosecution if we don't pay an extra $5,000. Now, there's no reasonable way that a retained or any other type of attorney for a defendant could prosecute the family. You could theoretically sue for fees, although I think it would be the defendant, not necessarily the family, unless there was some kind of a guarantee in a contract. But to use the term prosecute is extremely troubling to me, and I think to a sense of fair justice. So
there's another strain here, which is, do we have any idea whether he was eligible for appointed counsel?
He had previously had appointed counsel, Dolfo Banda out of Yakima, I believe, and he had been replaced by Mr. Marchand.
So essentially, I mean, a part of what he was asking for here was to go back to having appointed counsel because he couldn't afford to pay.
That's
his
my
lawyer,
reading
and he wasn't paying his lawyer.
That's my reading of the record. Is he was asking the court to appoint counsel because this one, because he was fearful of this attorney, which both Mr. Rivera Corona and his counsel told the court, which is troubling. I mean, that's different than a breakdown in communication. That's, I'm afraid of this man. And then he goes forward and tells the court why. And in response, the court said, anything else? Now, I have great respect for that particular trial judge. I practice in front of him all the time, and I don't want to infer anything about Mr. Marchi, about what he was or was not doing, or about that court. That's not why we're here. The problem is the inadequacy of the record.
What's the remedy? What are you asking for?
Your Honor, we're asking for remand for the district court to reconsider the level of, I'll call it the breakdown in communication, but the discord between Mr. Rivera Corona and his counsel, and based on that hearing, whether or not a withdrawal of the plea is justified.
What we held in Musa, in other words.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What we did in Musa.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
Morning.
Counsel, I'm Jane Kirk, and I'm representing the government in this case. From the reading of the record, it's clear that the defendant had a change of heart. He wanted to continue fighting his case. That's what he told the judge during the ex parte hearing.
Well, he could have been exactly what he said, which is he had wanted to go to trial, but he was told he had to pay more money than he had, and there was lots of things you'd like to know. Was he told, and if you don't like it, you can go to the judge and get an appointed counsel if you can't pay me? Was he told that? We don't know. We don't know exactly what was said to him, or so on. But it isn't necessarily a change of heart. It may be that he felt coerced into pleading guilty because of the financial situation and because he wasn't fully informed, perhaps. And that he now, when he says he wants to continue to plead to do his case, that may not be a change of heart. It may be what he thought all along, but was coerced, or felt coerced into acceding.
But the defendant, when he pled guilty, it was the first day of trial. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as if he couldn't have had a trial. They were all ready to go to trial. The trial was...
Oh, he says, though, and this is what we don't know, he says, no, not unless he gave the guy $5,000 more. That's what he said very briefly. There may be a whole lot more to the story. It may not be true, but we have no idea.
We don't have an idea on that. But we do have the fact that at the time that he changed his plea, he didn't say that there was any problem. That at the time he was sentenced, he said that there was no problem. Everything was fine. So we have those two statements that everything is fine, and then right after the plea is taken...
Wait, but he wasn't sentenced until after this, right?
Pardon?
Well, after the withdrawal motion.
He was sentenced after the withdrawal motion.
All right. At that point, he hadn't gotten what he wanted, so what was he supposed to do at that point?
Well, he could tell the judge that
he'd already told him, and nobody listened to him. I don't understand what the sentencing has to do with it, because the sentencing was afterwards, after he'd been refused.
He could have reiterated your suggesting that he was still unsatisfied.
Right, and that's what the cases show when there is found that that there was no representation by counsel, and the Adelanzo, the Moore, the Gwynn cases. It's that there's such conflict there that and those defendants were consistently telling the court, listen, I'm not getting along with this. With this attorney.
Right. Suppose this is what happened. Suppose, because we don't know, right? Suppose what happened was, which would be inconsistent with what Rivera Cronus said, that he said to his lawyer, I want to go to trial, and the lawyer said, then you'll have to pay me $5,000 more, and he said, I don't have the $5,000, and the lawyer said, and the lawyer didn't say, well, I can go see about getting an appointment, and he therefore felt that he had no choice, but and let's also suppose that he was eligible for an appointed counsel. That would not be a ground for substituting counsel if that's what happened. I suppose they were still talking to each other, but let's assume that's what happened. Would that be a ground for substituting counsel?
If he was told you can't go to trial without more money, that would be yes.
All right. So it doesn't matter whether they were talking to each other or whether it had been a communication breakdown or any of that.
Well, it does matter, but in this particular case,
it doesn't
look.
In this particular case, it doesn't really matter.
No.
Okay. So we need to know whether that happened, and we don't know.
But we do have at his sentencing where he just says everything's fine.
So we're stuck trying to figure out what the judge had in mind, and all he needed to do was ask a couple questions.
That's true. Yeah.
Judge said.
Go ahead.
The judge seemed to assume that the defendant here was not eligible for a CJA appointment, didn't he?
I don't. Well,
you look at his remarks, and he said there's no ground for an appointment or something like that. In other words, he never really, I think he treated this as a pure fee case and a breakdown case, and he never really looked into whether the fellow was entitled to an appointment because he'd exhausted his money and he couldn't afford, this retained lawyer wouldn't take a trial without more money. He had no more money. Seems to me that's a circumstance where then the judge ought to inquire whether, he should get an appointment. As Mr. Partovi said that earlier on, he was found to be eligible for appointment, right?
Right. And the judge knew that.
What about the comments the judge made that, seemed to indicate that he was not he didn't view this defendant as he never even considered, in other words, he says here, it's a transcript, nor do I find any grounds for you to have counsel appointed at public expense. What is that supposed to mean?
Well, you could say that you could interpret it the way Your Honor is, that he doesn't qualify for appointed counsel, or you could interpret it also that I don't see a reason to appoint new counsel because the counsel you have is adequate.
But without making the inquiry about this, dispute about that counsel having, in a sense, that I need $5,000 more. Without making that inquiry, whether that was true or not. We don't know whether he made that demand, do we?
No, we don't.
And so as follow up on what Judge Berzon said, suppose the lawyer said, well, I need $5,000 more to take it to trial. And the guy said, well, I have no money. My family has no more money. So I guess I have to plead guilty. That was his only option. Now, we don't know whether that was true or not, do we, because the judge never made an inquiry.
The judge did not ask that question.
Although he did ask at the change of plea colloquy, there was dialogue about whether he'd been coerced into doing anything.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, should we give that any weight in the analysis or not? It really comes down to what happened at the request for change of counsel.
I would hope that the court would give that a lot of weight. He was under oath at that time. A reading of the record of his later, when the motion to have substitute counsel, it was clear from the defendant's arguments, he just wanted to continue fighting. It was a change of heart.
Isn't it also true, I mean, maybe fortuitously, but it's connected, that the one thing that wasn't said at the Rule 11 colloquy was that he had a right to appointed counsel?
That is true.
So ordinarily you'd say, well, that doesn't much matter, but it may well have mattered here.
Except for his long history with the court and the number of times he had been told that he was entitled mm-hmm. to appointed counsel. And in the plea agreement, it clearly stated that he was entitled. So in this case, it's rather amazing how many times he was in court and being told, you know, you have the right to appointed counsel.
Where is that in the record? I don't remember that.
Okay, just a moment, please, Your Honor. I detailed it in my the assertion of facts because I was troubled by the fact that the judge in the Rule 11 did not.
What page of the brief is that? Do you know that?
Okay. On page 22 of the government's brief, he was informed of his right to counsel not only in writing but orally by the magistrate during his initial appearance and at both arraignments. And it's the supplementary excerpts of record, the second supplementary excerpts of record at 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 13, and 14.
And what about the plea agreement? It's in the plea agreement that says he's entitled to.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
No, but see, that's all, you know, in a sense, you know, water under the bridge, because after that, he was appointed counsel under the CJA, too. Apparently, his family came up with some money, so he substituted retained counsel. And so he had counsel up to a certain point. But then, you know, the money ran out. And the lawyer may have said, in effect, well, I can't do anything else for you unless you pay me. And no one told him at that point, well, then, you know, you can get an appointed counsel, right? And he was never told that at the Rule 11, the proceeding, either.
He was not told that at the Rule 11, although the plea agreement did say that he had that right to a counsel.
But, you know, at that point, it's meaningless because he has counsel, right? He had Marchi at the plea agreement. But at a point after that, Marchi says, I need more money. And he says, well, I don't have it. So no one told him then at that point he has the option to have an appointed lawyer, right?
That's correct.
Under those circumstances. So, you know, it seems to me these general admonitions, you know, early on at the arraignment, while you can have counsel, it's almost meaningless in this situation, I think.
What? I see
time. So, yeah, I think we have the issues well in mind. Counsel, you have some reserved time. Could you, on that issue, the plea agreement does say that while defendant is waiving certain constitutional rights, he understands he retains the right to be assisted through the sentencing and any direct appeal of the conviction and sentence by an attorney who will be appointed at no cost if the defendant cannot afford to hire an attorney. So what's the point of putting that in the plea agreement?
Well, Judge, I don't think it's fair to argue that Mr. Vericorna was not informed that he had a right to counsel. What I would say is that, and we haven't alleged that. I mean, he was, and thank goodness for our system, you get that at every stage of the proceedings, really. He knew he had a right to counsel. What he wanted.
Right to appointed counsel, that's what we've been talking about. He knew that.
Correct. I think that's what he was asking the court for on April 23rd, was appointed counsel. Mm-hmm. And his reasoning was that I'm being threatened by my current attorney, a fact which really wasn't disputed by his current lawyer. He said, Mr. Corona's fearful of me. Your Honors, the couple of points that I want to make before my time's up is just that I feel like I should admit that this whole thing is sort of unfortunate. It's not judicially economical to remand this case, but the Sixth Amendment really hangs in the balance. And so I think that because we must have an adequate inquiry under this court's law, and here we really are all speculating. The nature of the questions, the nature of my assertion in the briefing and here today, I think even the nature of some of the responses from the government is that we really are all speculating as to what really happened.
Unfortunately, I mean, I would agree with that, because the problem is, having authored Musa, you know, 10 years ago, and all this line of cases we've all gone through, we still find we're having to sit here trying to figure out what was in the mind of the of district court, and what was in the mind, more importantly, of the defendant. So, in any event,
I think in a lot of the court's cases, you've been able to ascertain that. Monday, there was the Reyes-Bosque filing that we've been made aware of, and in that case, the court reiterated the law and found that in that case, because of a number of different things, questioning that was directed at the defendant, questioning directed at the attorney, things we just don't have here, the court found an adequate inquiry. In other cases, that's just not the case. And so, yeah, it probably shouldn't be continuing, but, you know, life's difficult. I don't think it's fair to point any fingers. The problem
I wasn't pointing fingers. I think it's just, it's frustrating.
It is frustrating, Judge, and I don't want to pretend like that's not the case. But I really think that the Sixth Amendment hangs in the balance here, and the inquiry was inadequate, so we're asking the court to remand for that hearing.
Thank you, Vice.
Thank
Counsel,
you.
We thank both of you for your good arguments. All right, the case argued is submitted.